This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're with Morning Run. Julian, Lin and Sharice here with you. Now, China is looking to reduce direct government intervention in its vast industrial sector. The government will gradually reduce its micromanagement and direct intervention and will continue to encourage higher value production.
Yeah, so the government's pledge to reduce its influence over operational matters in China's manufacturing sector follows an apparent toning down of its high-tech industrial push, which has been a bit of a sticking point for the United States. However, its Minister of Industry and Information Technology, Miao Wei, he didn't elaborate on the so-called Made in China 2025 plan, which was an initiative to help China catch up with the world. But the state-backed industrial policy has provoked some alarm, so in the Western Hemisphere, due to China's open efforts to deploy state support and subsidies.
So despite the latest appeasing tone struck by Beijing to placate Washington, it's does not necessarily mean that China is less serious about its high-tech manufacturing drive, but with local governments still rolling out plans to help manufacturers move up the value chain. So Miao said that the technology manufacturer needed to survive the valley of death as they seek to turn laboratory samples into mass production. And looking at southern province of Hunan this month, they have issued a three-year plan for the AI sector, pledging more support for the local industries, whose size is projected to be about $1.5 billion by 2021.
Yeah, that's right. They have produced a lot of service robots, rose 14 times more robots from January to since January to February. Imagine this is the largest country with the biggest population in the world, mm-hmm. and they're also producing a lot of robots, right? So we know where this is heading, right? The robots are taking over the world.
Yeah. There's a lot of ethical questions about that.
Exactly. So China is also planning to launch a highly anticipated NASDAQ-style technology board. So this is a move by Beijing to counter U.S. curbs on China's technology advances. And it's going to be pretty big. So this change will allow hundreds, possibly even thousands of China's tech companies to go public for the first time. So this is something that hasn't been possible before because currently unprofitable companies are banned from China's stock market.
Yeah, I think this is going to be something on the ball being in the US's court, because it is undeniable that China is becoming an economic giant. They're going to be very good at a lot of things compared to the United States. So all these issues about Huawei, about trade talks, about the opening up China really points to the fact that they're just trying to placate the United States. But really the question is on whether the United States can step up its game as far as technology innovation is concerned. I mean, they've done very well with Silicon Valley and all mm-hmm. that, but China is the other guy to contend with right now.
So you spoke rightly about innovation. They have gone they've gone quite far, isn't it? I mean, with regards to the development of scientific journals, for example, they are producing one-third of the total scientific journal today, and that is a signal that they are ready to go, to stand alone, basically, with regards to innovation technology.
Well, there is also the Belt and Road Initiative to contend with as their great big push into the world. And Italy has signed up to the Belt and Road Initiative, which is making a lot of EU technocrats sit up and listen. There was an MOU signed, and it covered areas such as banking, construction, ports, and even the returns of hundreds of Chinese cultural goods that are currently in Italy.
Yeah, so, and of course, if you remember, the Belt and Road Initiative is what China calls the modern Silk Road. So it's their effort to connect with countries like Malaysia across the world to boost trade and investments. And analysts at Morgan Stanley predict that China's investments in Belt and Road countries could reach $1.3 trillion by 2027.
So to get a better understanding of this, we speak to Professor of Global History, Peter Frankopan, from the University of Oxford. Italy has become the first country among the G7 to sign up to China's Belt Road Initiative, to the dismay of its European allies. How significant is this?
I think from China's perspective, that's obviously hugely symbolically important that China's trying to offer a vision for what's going on in the world, in which China and Beijing are right in the centre. So getting Italy, a member of the G7, to subscribe and become a partner in the Belt and Road is quite an important symbolic validation of the Belt and Road and of China more generally. Secondly, from China's perspective, the memorandums that have been signed with Italy offer the opportunity for future cooperation in projects like ports, like railway lines, infrastructure, energy, and so on, which China's shown, obviously, its great interest in other countries, as well as you know, very well in Malaysia.
And Peter, what does Italy stand to gain from this?
Italy's perspective is a bit more interesting, I suppose, because Italy is a very important global economy. It's the fifth largest economy in the world. It's part, of course, of the G7, but above all of the European Union. And right now, the EU is trying to work out how to develop its relationships with China, how to manage China's growth, how to manage the fact that Chinese companies have much more access into markets in Europe than European companies do into markets in China. So from Italy's perspective, again, it's not. I don't think it's promising to sell the family silver in the future, but it's opening the door to say that Italy is willing to have these negotiations and discussions with China, perhaps separate from within the EU. And that I think is significant. Italy has not been able to invest very extensively in infrastructure over the last decade. It's currently in recession, has a very extended bond market, very significant national debts. And so China, which is turning up and offering to invest in big projects, it looks like it's offering money that will allow and spur economic growth in Italy.
Look, Peter, given the more cautious stance of the US and also other European countries towards China, especially in light of security concerns over Huawei, does Italy with China suggest a deeper schism with rapprochement in the EU? And do you see more EU member states taking part in this Belt and Road Initiative moving forward?
Well, the countries that are on the eastern lip of the European Union form something called the 16+1. So the countries of Eastern and Central Europe are less economically developed than the big powerhouses of the EU. That's to say Germany, France, and as we speak, Great Britain, the United Kingdom is still a member of the European Union. By the time this is broadcast or listened to on downloads, who knows? Well, in theory, we're supposed to be leaving the European Union on Friday. But countries on the eastern fringes are not as economically developed. And as a result, Chinese investment looks much more attractive to them. So a significant part, for example, of Germany's exports, 7%, goes out to China. And it's a much smaller proportion for Italy. So there is an imbalance here in Europe about perspectives on China. I have to say there's also an imbalance in the perspectives on other parts of the world, too. You know, we're not quite sure here in the EU how to respond to the United States, where President Trump has been talking about putting tariffs on German cars and things like this. So I think here in Europe, Brexit is a sort of symptom of the fact that we are very unhappy about being able to negotiate and find a way forwards in the world. We're not quite sure what the future brings. And we suddenly realise that this is a much more complex and complicated world than we'd realise. And that, I think, betrays the fact that we've been too busy in Europe admiring our own reflection in the mirror without realising that, well, Southeast Asia, China, South Asia, Western Africa and so on, and South America are all on the move in some unpredictable ways. But you know, this growth is nothing that has taken those of us who watch these areas by surprise.
And that was Professor Peter Frankopan from the University of Oxford. Very interesting that the Eastern Europe is not getting as much love from the Western European technocrats and therefore being more open to money offers of money, overtures from China. We'll be coming back with the local business news right after the break. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.